Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And it was overwhelming. Like, everyone's like, you can't trade Dez. And I'm sitting there going, like, you can't trade Jarrett.
Correct.
Like, I think he's more irreplaceable than Dez. And I'm not even trying to make this like a Jarrett versus Dez thing. All right. Biggest pleasant surprise.
So many to pick from. It got to be Jalen Wells. Second round pick, coming in as a rookie, filling a starting role, hitting threes, taking on challenging defensive assignments. We've got our questions about what Jalen Wells is going to be able to do for you in a playoff series. Totally fair. Through the first half of the season, though, for a second-round pick to come in and lead the NBA in scoring for you, when you're not even a bad team, when you're a really good team, that's been far and away, you know, above and beyond what I would have expected from him.
I think that's the right answer. I do want to give honorable mention just to Yuki Mania. But I think the right answer is Jalen Wells.
I mean, you could argue pleasant surprise Santi Aldama. You could argue Scottie Pippen Jr.
Jay Huff.
The step that Jake LaRavia has taken has been pronounced and significant. And heck, if you were as down on the Zach Edey selection as I was, like, you know, he's been a pleasant surprise. I mean, what, think about it in these terms. Who's been the most disappointing Grizzly?
Okay, so I was thinking about the next side of that. I think my answer is Marcus Smart. And the problem
but
is...
really only because he's been hurt.
That's the problem. It's like, before he got hurt the last time, he had like one bad game, but he kind of started stringing together performances of good. I also just keep coming back to, I think they're going to need Marcus in the playoffs. I think they're going to need... I think Marcus would really help in those Rockets games because I think they need somebody that like actually is like street tough.
Somebody who can bite back at a Dylan Brooks.
Like, honestly, that's kind of the other thing. It's like, who else? Vince would obviously help because I think Vince has got that dog in him. And then I legitimately think the third, like if you're talking like, if you're going into a fight and you can only bring three guys, like I think you're bringing Marcus, Vince, and honestly, Edey.
Did you see that Gigi Jackson was getting into it with the Rio Grande Valley Vipers last night? Jonah Dillon had some phenomenal like play-by-play commentary from down in South Haven. He got teed up going after
showing that
a
energy
Rip City player. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it wasn't Rio Grande Valley. It was whatever the Rip City G League team is. But Gigi's coming back with some swag, it looks like.
And like that's kind of the other thing. I guess the thing that's been disappointing to me about Edey, it's kind of been a reversal of what I thought you were going to get from him. I kind of thought he would be good offensively, but he would struggle defensively. He has struggled more on the offensive end than I expected, and he's not been the liability that I think at times everyone thought he's going to be. Like, I think most people thought he's going to be unplayable on defense. Now, they're still bringing him off the floor. Like, I'm not acting like, hey, they're, you know, like last night, I don't know if it's related to shooting the ball better or whatnot, but it's like they took in the second half, they took Edey off the floor a lot and they started, like, that's when they made their run. Now, I actually think, though, the more interesting debate is, are the Grizzlies going to have to maybe sacrifice some defense for offense? Because I actually thought the bigger story was the lineup of it was Ja, Dez, Kennard, Santi, Jaren. That was the lineup that ate. And obviously that's not going to be your best defensive lineup, but like that might be your offensive like lineup of death.
Oh gosh. I mean, the productivity of the second half was off the charts. I that might have been their most productive half of the season. I can't remember if that was said on the broadcast or not, but when you get into the playoffs and every series becomes more of a grind, every yeah. possession becomes more of a grind, are you going to be able to win games with the offense first unit out there? And then that's where a Marcus Smart, a Zach Edey, those guys, Vince Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, those three could all be the question for me looming over all that is how playable is Zach Edey going to be in a playoff series when the opposing teams are drawing him out from the basket, putting him in the pick and roll. As you mentioned, he's shown flashes. He's arguably been better defensively to this point, you know, than you might've expected, but you get to the playoffs, there's a whole new level of intensity, a whole new level of physicality. That's if you're asking me biggest questions at the halfway mark about the Grizzlies moving forward, it's really not even about, well, what does Vince Williams look like when he comes back, or, you know, how much can GG play? I mean, those things have a way of sorting themselves
yeah.
out. The biggest questions to me is how do you navigate the postseason with a starting lineup that features two rookies? If it in fact still does, because Jalen Wells to me has earned the right to continue on in a starting role. He's been that good. Zach Edey, due to necessity, due to the fact you don't have another physical bruising type of five, I think he's probably going to continue to log starts as well. And so you get into that postseason, if those guys are still in your lineup, I mean, there's not any other teams in the NBA starting two rookies, let alone Western Conference contenders. And so that could be a problem. Like if you are still relying so heavily on those guys in the playoffs.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get into the list. Let's talk about the Cowboys opening and more from the world of sports. Also want to get Cobb's thoughts on the TGL. Also, we had an SEC triple header last night. I want to discuss how we feel about that. We'll discuss all that when we come back right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The biggest college football game is finally here on Monday, and what better way to watch the big event than an exclusive watch party presented by Zen Sports, the new sports betting app in Tennessee, and Six Pack. That's right, this Monday, Zen Sports and Six Pack presents the VIP Players Club Lounge Football Championship Watch Party at the Corner Pub over in downtown Nashville. So if you're over in Nashville, it's a great spot to go watch the game. You can join the party on Monday at the Corner Pub from 5 p.m. until 9, and you could earn free drink vouchers, free food entries, and more. For all new customers, Zen Sports, who attend the party and sign up using the code SIXPACK, S-I-X-P-A-C, SIXPACK, you will earn a free drink voucher, and when you make a bet, you will earn a free entree voucher and a $200 no-danger first wager. You'll also earn 500 bonus entries after you place your bet into the January VIP Players Club sweepstakes, where you could be the grand prize winner of a $10,000 bonus bet on the NFL big game and $10,000 cash, or the alternative prize of $15,000 cash. So don't miss out. Come out to the Corner Pub downtown in Nashville this Monday for a great night of sports. Zen Sports betting just got better. Jason Smith going to join us next. Before we do that, let's get in the list. All right, Ed Warder over on Twitter this morning wrote the following. Regarding Deion Sanders, I'm being told that he would almost certainly accept if Jerry Jones offered to make him the next Cowboys head coach, that those around him are encouraging him to pursue it, and that Jones is enamored with the idea. All right, it's important to note a couple of things here. Number one, like, this is just a tweet. Like, there's no real news there. I think everything we read in that tweet, we kind of knew. I guess the Jerry Jones side of it, I think we all knew, like, Deion would be interested in the Cowboys job. Like, that's not surprising to me. I still kind of struggle to see this happening. Am I alone in that?
Surely there are candidates out there who are more qualified than Deion Sanders. However, the nostalgic allure, the marketability, the frenzy that this would set off, I think that's what's got to make it attractive to Jerry Jones, is just putting the Dallas Cowboys front and center, scooping the NFL playoffs as the biggest story in the NFL. I mean, come on, Jerry Jones would love that. My man is out here appearing on Landman. Like, clearly he's got an eye for the spotlight.
That was a great performance.
I was like, hold on.
He's like crying about working with his family. It's like, that was powerful.
That was really good, man. That was a star-studded little moment right there of TV. We got Jerry Jones in there with Don Draper and Billy Bob Thornton. I mean, come on. That was fantastic. But no, so when I first saw that there had been a conversation between Jerry Jones and Deion Sanders, this is how it played out in my mind. It was Jerry Jones saying, "Hey, Deion, congratulations on a great season, you know, at Colorado. Really proud of you, man. You'll always be a Cowboy. I love you. I want you to be able to say that we talked because I know that'll kind of help your image. And look, if you're able to continue on having some more success as a head coach for a few more seasons, you know, you're going to be in the running the next time we have an opening." That's, in my mind, that's how that conversation went. But hey, this Ed Werder tweet makes me think perhaps there's a little more something to it.
I tend to agree with you. I just kind of thought in general the contact was initiated by Deion. Now, one thing I can't get out of my head, I don't remember exactly what 30 for 30 it was, but there was a scene in one of them where Jerry is recounting the story of going to sign Deion from the Niners. And he tells the story that they're on the plane and that Steven is basically being like, "What are you doing? Like, we're paying a corner like more than anyone in the NFL. Like, why are we doing this?" And Jerry's like, "I just looked at Steven and told him, Steven, I want Deion Sanders. I'm going to go get Deion Sanders." And it certainly is buzzy, splashy. I'm also at the point where it's like, I don't know. Like, I'm not really in the doubting Deion business. Like, if you look at like what he's done at Colorado, now it greatly helped that with Deion came a really good college quarterback and the Heisman Trophy winner. That's what he brought with him. And so in all these games this year, he's usually going into the game with the best player and the best quarterback. But Colorado was what, 1-11?
1-11 to 9 wins 2 years later. You just can't completely chalk that up to,
like, you can't just sit there.
Well, talent, you know?
And like, there was some friction. Like, he hires Sean Lewis, demotes Sean Lewis, gets Pat Shurmur, and like they dealt with like standard things that you deal with in college football, like staff problems, whatnot. I'm just not really convinced that like this would be some type of spectacular failure. Now, I do wonder in the back of my mind, like, is Dak Prescott Deion Sanders' quarterback?
Well, that's the whole deal, is because it's always been that Deion isn't going to jump jobs unless he can go to the NFL and coach his sons. I think he basically told Good Morning America that a few days ago. Is that like,
well, he's kind of like giving,
like, you coach my sons.
Well, he's kind of done, like, given like
on a what, however many hundreds of millions of dollars of contract. I mean, they're not going to kick him to the curb or try to make a. I mean, how would you even trade Dak Prescott
so
at this point?
So maybe, I mean, the speculation that I saw is Cleveland at 2. Now, this is partly dependent on Cam going 1. And I'm still not convinced at this point. I know Cam is popping up on more and more mock drafts as the number 1 player. And I think Cam's ceiling is probably higher than Shador's, but I definitely think Shador has a much, much higher floor. I'm not convinced that some of that is not just boredom because Shador's been the number 1 quarterback all year. It's like, all right, we're not really in real hashtag draft season yet. And so maybe there's some boredom, like, all right, let's shake things up. But I think it's also a defensible point. Like, if you want to make the case that you think Cam can be a better NFL quarterback, I can listen to that. The idea would be you trade Dak to Cleveland.
Oh, God. Poor guy.
Because, I mean, what are the Browns going to do? You've got Deshaun with another Achilles injury, likely to miss another season. And you're not going to hand the reins to Jameis. Like, I saw some of that. I also saw that Cleveland might be interested in Cousins. So, like,
well, this to me is why the Raiders would actually be a better fit for Deion Sanders. I mean, they don't have a clear quarterback plan, not from what I can tell, right? So,
and I think actually Vegas would be Vegas would be a good spot for Shador, because while the Raiders has been financially lucrative, Tim Murray, who's with me on Tuesdays and Fridays, like, man, like, this isn't a Raiders town yet. Like, it's not, it doesn't, like, it's a soft media market for the Raiders. And
you could convince enough teams ahead of you to pass on Shador, because it's going to be hard. One, you got the Dak problem. And then two, you got to tell 11 other franchises ahead of you in the draft that you can't take my son at quarterback. Well, if you go to the Raiders, they're going to be what, six in this draft? So you could pull that off with five teams, right? So I don't know. I think you'd make more sense in Vegas. But culturally, being a guy who spent most of his life in Texas, being a guy who's a Cowboys legend, yeah, like, and then you look at the list of who they've interviewed, it's so underwhelming. I mean, we're talking about Robert Saleh. We're talking about Kellen Moore, who comes up every cycle, but is still just a 30-something offensive coordinator.
By the way, and was fired by the Cowboys.
Exactly. So, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, relative to the other candidates that Dallas is interviewing, I mean, Deion Sanders doesn't seem totally ludicrous to me. Now, the other question is, what is his schematic specialty? Almost every head coach in the NFL was an NFL coordinator prior to getting the job, or I guess in the case of Jim Harbaugh, a really successful college coach who did have NFL experience. But, I mean, Deion Sanders, what's his – he's not a play caller. He's not a defensive coordinator. He's a phenomenal cornerbacks coach. I mean, clearly look at what he did with Travis Hunter. But what is his schematic specialty?
I think he's a culture guy.
Does that fly? Does that work? Can you do that?
I mean, if you're going to have a culture guy, the hard part is you've got to have really good assistants. Like, this is going to be what's interesting about the Lions. Like, Dan Campbell is the culture guy.
That's a good comp, yeah.
And you have Ben Johnson, who it seems like the Raiders are clearing the deck. They're trying to, like, focus in on Ben Johnson. So if he does indeed take that job, and then Aaron Glenn is strongly rumored to be getting the New Orleans job, you're replacing both your coordinators. Oftentimes what we see with culture guys is when they have their staff intact, they're usually pretty good, but the hardest thing for them to do is to replenish.
That's why you're seeing Dabo go so hard after a big-name defensive coordinator at Clemson, getting Tom Allen in there from Penn State, because he knows he's got to have that staff at a high level. I don't know. I would love to see it. I think it'd be fantastic. It would make the Cowboys mega interesting. You know, and at this point, don't doubt Deion anymore. I mean, that's the lesson I've learned over the last 2 years. I think myself and a lot of people doubted him, didn't think he was going to get Colorado turned around this successfully, this quick. He's done that. If he gets offered the job, I think it's a no-brainer. Like, we had our discussion this morning, as we do every weekday morning with the CBS crew, and somebody was like, hey, why don't we write about why Deion should stay at Colorado? And it's like, well, if he gets offered an NFL head coaching job, why would he? Why would he stay at Colorado? The only reason that you really can come up with is that he is the boss at Colorado. He runs that program exactly how he wants to run it. And while, yes, technically on paper in the hierarchy, he may answer to an athletic director.
No, he's the most powerful guy. President. No, I agree with you.
But if you go to Dallas, which you would have to do if they offered, you can't say no. Then you have Jerry Jones as your boss, right? So it's a totally different dynamic there. And while they may have gotten along for the most part during his playing career, the player-owner dynamic, it's a whole lot different than the owner-coach dynamic. And I think there's a lot more accountability, especially with how hands-on Jerry Jones is. And so the only reason why he wouldn't jump if offered is just literally if he just loves that autonomy.
I still can't tell if this is leverage. I don't know. I guess what is he getting out of Colorado? I guess a better deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's going to need NIL, right? But shoot, I mean, I can't imagine what Shador and Travis were getting. I mean, you got to think that frees up a nice chunk of change for him to go out and get some talent. But they're going to be in line for a regression next season. It's going to be hard for them to go out and win 9 games again after what they lost. So it's like, this is the perfect time for him to jump. But, you know, at the same time, I do kind of believe him when he says he likes where he's at. And I don't get the sense that he's just chomping at the bit to get out of there. And I kind of thought he might be. I thought once Shiloh was done, once Shador was done, he would either just call it quits or go for the first thing that came available elsewhere. It doesn't really seem to be the case. It seems like unless it's an NFL head coaching job, and potentially an NFL head coaching job plus the guarantee that he'll get to coach Shador, seems like he might stay put.
All right, the college football playoff. All right, Cobb, over at ESPN, Heather Dinich, who covers the college football playoff, the selection process, everything for ESPN. The big question is, are we going to have changes for next season? And she writes this. Can change happen next season? To make any changes for next season, including something seemingly as simple as seeding, every conference and Notre Dame must unanimously agree to it, leaving serious doubts among multiple sources with knowledge of the process that the 2025 playoff will look much different than what we've seen this past month. Because January is so compressed, the FBS commissioners could schedule a separate virtual conversation next month for a comprehensive review. Rich Clark, the CFP executive director, I don't know where the changes might be. We just have our first meeting where we get everything out at the table at the championship game. Then we'll start fleshing out the things that we need to decide. Could seeding change? Multiple sources indicate the most likely adjustment for 2025 could be the seeding, though that could be divisive. In the current structure, the five highest-ranked conference champions are guaranteed spots. We all know this. I guess this is the real question I have for you. You think we're getting any change? Because it seems to me like the possible changes we could have are, I think I've seen, it's seeding, number of automatic qualifiers, and I think they could add two teams. But all of that requires unanimous support, and I don't know who would vote for that.
Well, I think what's interesting about the Heather Dinich piece is who is not quoted.
Yeah.
Not quoted.
Greg Sankey.
He's mentioned what he told The Athletic about how they put in the system of automatic buys for the top conference champions before conference realignment, a.k.a. before we added Texas and Oklahoma, before the Big Ten added Oregon and Washington and USC and UCLA. And so what he's insinuating with what he told The Athletic is that, well, had we known that our two leagues were going to have the lion's share of the national competitors, we probably would have structured it differently. So to me, it comes down to what Greg Sankey wants here. And I don't think he's going to be wrong to push for a different format, because I think the college football playoff product would have been better if the bracket had been seeded differently. And if Boise State and Arizona State didn't have buys, we would have had more competitive games throughout the playoff. However, I feel no sympathy at all for the SEC or for the Big Ten.
They agreed to it.
They agreed to it, and then they did conference realignment. Texas and Oklahoma said, you know what? Yeah, we're going to leave the Big 12 where the playoff path is wide open and tailor-made for us. We're going to leave that, and we're going to go to the SEC. Oregon and Washington and the LA schools said the same thing. You know what? We could run the Pac-12 and give ourselves a great chance of making the playoff every year out here in this conference, but we're going to give that up and go chase the almighty dollar, fly our kids across the country, you know, 25 times a year in volleyball because the Big Ten has money, right? So they signed up for it. The conference has signed up for it. And now they're saying, oh, well, the playoffs should be changed. No, I mean, this is, you agreed to this. And so I don't really feel any sympathy for them while also acknowledging the product would be better if they tweaked it. It's like you can't agree to a playoff system and then cry that it's all messed up when you're the one who messed it up.
Yeah, honestly, my biggest complaint with it right now, it just feels too long. And I don't know if there's a quick, like, I don't know if there's a simple fix, but it's like,
man, there should be a week between all these games, not 10 days, 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's the other thing. All right, let's take a quick break. Let's get back into some Tigers. We'll do that. Tigers Temple tonight. Let's talk about it with Jason Smith next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jason Smith is the host of the Jason and John Show, weekdays right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN, from 11 until 2. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at JasonSmith929. Been doing yeoman's work. John returns via Zoom today, but 3 hours one-on-one, I got nothing but a hat tip for you, my man. I know that's been a long, tough week, and I appreciate you deciding, hey, I still got some more takes to fire right here with us.
I appreciate it, brother. Always happy to join you guys. Really really enjoy the opportunity. And, yeah, I appreciate the pat on the back, man. You know it as well as anybody. You may as well do 3 hours sometimes when you've got to do Jeff's show and your show. You're basically on 2 to 4 hours a day.
At least I get a break.
what I wasn't prepared for is the I didn't take good care of my lips through this cold, and so all that talking led to some real, literally physical burning of lips that I wasn't prepared. So glad to have John back where the lips could rest just a little bit today.
All right. It's not definitive, but it's entirely possible tonight is the last quad two opportunity for the Tigers as they go to Temple.
Oh, say it ain't so.
Again, now, who's to say, you know, could...
Wichita State or UAB on those road games, perhaps?
Maybe, but it's like they've got work to do.
Absolutely.
I think the thing that's interesting about tonight is how quickly do they wash the taste of the second half against ECU out of their mouth?
I mean, you know, I think we're going to see very early on an answer to that, and maybe, Jeff, just how focused a road team they've been.
Yeah.
You know, the question marks have come in the games at home. But if you, I mean, even in their one road game so far in the AAC down at FAU, they absolutely blew them off the floor and did it from the get-go. You go all the way back to the road opener at UNLV, this team's undefeated on the road, and for whatever reason, there's more focus. Cobb, I mean, you guys have pointed to something. I mean, there are, you know, I won't say red flags at this point. You're 3-0 in conference, everything's going, but certainly concerns in terms of the way you turn the ball over. I mean, how in terms of the non-forced turnovers. I mean, you're right there with the worst teams in the country, and unfortunately back to where you were, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago under Penny Hardaway with a veteran lineup. And you could say, well, hey, you know, this team, at the way it plays, is going to turn the ball over. But look at that ECU game. Cobb's absolutely right. I said it on our show. They had no business being, you know, that being a one-possession game late after you'd been up 18. Much of it was due to how much you gave them in the second half. That was ECU's best offense, scoring off your turnovers. And so I say all that to say, you know, if you're going to be that generous, that charitable, that reckless with the ball at times, even against bad competition in the AAC, there's still things to be concerned about. But all in all, though, Jeffrey, I mean, I'm with you guys. It feels different. This is a tougher team. It's certainly a tighter rotation that Penny's familiar with. I think Dante Harris, who played 22 minutes against ECU, could really help, maybe in a way, maybe perhaps in a more impactfully than we thought when Penny added him. Played 22 minutes against ECU and is a guy coming out of that Virginia program that I think you can trust with the ball. Part of these turnovers, I think, it's because you got Tyrese and P.J. Haggerty and Colby Rogers have been out there 35, 38, 39 minutes per game. So getting some of that off, knowing that you've got an issue there and need to clean it up, I think all of that can lead to the, you know, 16-2, 17-1, maybe 18-0 mark that we're all hoping they can put up in this dog conference.
Jason, we were giving out midseason grades for Grizzlies a couple segments back. Kind of wanted to do the same for the Tigers with you. I mean, through 16 games, mid-January now, what kind of grade are you giving the Tigers for the first half of the season?
It'd be hard to give them anything less than an A, Cobb, especially with how tough the non-conference is when you played it, and it's turning out to be in terms of you watch Ole Miss go to Alabama, get that win over Ole Miss, standing out now. The UConn, the Michigan State wins, obviously. Your schedule is going to, you know, it feels like it's going to hold up in terms of what it can do for you in seeding, in terms of seeding for the NCAA tournament. Palm's got you right now, mostly in large part, obviously, due to what you did in the non-con as a three seed. And so to give them anything less than an A, when we didn't know, man, coming off of last season and even Penny's, the debacle that it was, you know, some of us had higher hopes certainly for P.J. Haggerty than my man John Martin, but we didn't know if him and Tyrese Hunter, two guys that played on the ball and have for all of their careers, was that going to mesh? Do you have enough in terms of the front court? All those kinds of things. So, Cobb, I think you've got to go, you know, I'd go solid A at this point. You'd love to have that Arkansas State game back, of course. It's the one, and Jeffrey's touched on it, that's what's holding you back, you know, really in the net right now, that loss at this point, and the fact, let's be real, that you're not bashing opponents like ECU in the head by double-digit deficits. But, now, Cobb, to answer your question, I'd go solid A for Penny Hardaway and these Tigers. I mean, come on, P.J. Haggerty has got a chance to be a first-team All-American. He's on some balance already, and so I think Borzello and Metcalf did a thing. I'm sure you guys have, too. I haven't seen y'all's, but P.J. Haggerty's going to be an All-American. What a get that has turned out to be, and really, I think y'all did surprise with the Grizzlies. And for me, it's Tyrese Hunter.
Yeah.
And just I wasn't real short and real quick. I wasn't prepared for him to be this good of a leader. You know, a better, you know, the kind of leader that you hope Javon Quinterly would be, the kind of leader that Kendrick Davis was. Except with Tyrese Hunter, he understands that it's not just necessarily with me being the scoring leader and the assist leader. I've been around long enough to understand, man, I got to score on this team. And P.J. Haggerty, you know, we've talked about this, Jeffrey, a ton. Their ability to mesh, and I think it's really Tyrese and his sort of veteran mindset to, hey, I'll take a step back to lead in some cases here. I think that's been the surprise for me, just how you know, really key he's been for them in terms of his leadership.
Do you think P.J. has a chance to end up having the best season anyone for Penny's had?
It's great. I mean, yeah, if you go first team All-American, because then you got to go back. You got to go back to what? And we keep going. Was CDR first team? We stop at CDR because I think he was first team.
I believe CDR was first team. I always got tripped up on whether it was like consensus or unanimous, but I'm pretty sure CDR was consensus.
Was the last. So yeah, he would be. And you guys were hitting on sort of what we've touched on. If I'm Penny Hardaway, I'm already making the plan. And it starts with, let me get, hey, I need this much, this much, this much. Here's the package for getting this guy back. Because it's perfect in the sense that the NBA isn't clamoring for P.J. Haggerty, a guy who could be a first-team All-American. You don't see him on any mock drafts yet. Perhaps he's starting to come, but haven't seen him as a selection or even thought of perhaps as a two-way guy, just because, you know, he's a 6'3", 6'4", scoring guard. And you know, most of the time, hell, you know, that if you're 6'3", 6'4", and you've got a shot at the league early, it's going to be as a point guard. And so if I'm Penny Hardaway, I got the money. I've got the pitch that PJ, without Tyrese next year, I've got to have an on-ball guy. And more importantly, we've got to prove to the league that you can play some point guard. There's only so many Jordan Clarksons in the league that get to play shooting guard at your size. And so that's what I'm pitching already, quite frankly, to PJ Haggerty, that I'm going to have the money to offset any offers he'll get from elsewhere. But more importantly, hey, man, look what I did for Quentin Grimes in his point guard camp before he went into the draft. R.J. Hampton, I've done it with. He runs that point guard U camp sort of in the offseason for pro hopefuls. I'd be telling P.J. Haggerty, but come back, do that. And sure, you want a couple other guards to handle the ball, but P.J. Haggerty, at the next level, at least for the NBA, is going to have to prove that he can run some point without turning it over, that he can run a team. And so that's what I'd already be pitching to him if I'm Penny Hardaway.
Can you put your finger on like what it is about this year's team that is so different from last year's group? Is it the simple fact of Tyrese Hunter's leadership or the sort of unexpected efficiency of P.J. Haggerty? I mean, is there a one thing that you can point to and say, okay, this is why Memphis is different this season?
I think you touched on it earlier. I can't remember whether it was in the opening segment or not. But last year's team, and while it was super talented, David Jones, Javon Quinterly, all those guys, I mean, Jaquan Walton was a guy who had scored at Wichita State. I think their idea, Cobb, of leadership, of stepping up, was taking the shots, right? And maybe sort of what I just touched on with Tyrese is sort of the difference there. That's chemistry. That's an understanding of leadership that some guys never get. You know, Javon Quinterly, you know, maybe, you know, his idea of leadership, hey, it's my time to take the shots. And listen, there, you know, Memphis, there were times where it looked like it was figured out last season, particularly when Caleb Mills was in the lineup. And he was one of those sacrifice guys that Penny Hardaway was saying that about, and the team was saying that about even before he got hurt. And so when you took a guy like him out of the lineup, I'm just not sure you had enough sacrifice guys or enough guys who understood I can lead by doing other things than just shot jacking. And so, you know, you wanted David Jones to be more of a leader. You wanted Javon to be more of a leader. Naquan Tomlin was in a position where you're coming in midseason, so he was never going to be that. But they just lacked that, Cobb. They lacked that chemistry, especially after losing Caleb Mills, that clearly this team has. Again, you can see it in the way they sort of respond, are talking to each other, even going to the locker room at halftime. You see Tyrese and P.J. huddled up, already talking about what they're going to do in the second half. The chemistry's better. You're dealing with fewer guys. So I would imagine, again, when you've got this kind of makeup of team and it's fewer guys, fewer ingredients in the pot, for all those reasons, it just looks, feels tougher, better chemistry. And quite frankly, I think, you know, in a lot of ways, you got better players, especially at those guard positions.
All right, we'll wrap up here. Little NFL. Who do you want the Bears to hire?
Yeah, well, obviously I wanted Ben. I've kind of sold myself. The Raiders, at least according to The Athletic and ESPN, are getting him. I've kind of sold myself on now. Well, he's going to fail as a head coach anyway. You know, we got what we got.
It only works.
Hot shot OCs that have failed as head coaches everywhere. Cliff Kingsbury is one of them, even though he's going to get a second shot at some point. Mike McDaniel might be one of those. So I've kind of talked about it. You know how that goes, Jeffrey, where you start talking about
I think it's a legitimate question with Ben Johnson.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
Because how many teams have that offensive line?
Yeah. No, there is no
that collection of offensive talent. I should just say everything.
Well, in that case, a quarterback who you're not having to teach, you're not having to figure out, okay, how do I teach him in terms of golf, who's a veteran, who for the most part is going to eat up everything that you throw at him because he's seen everything. Caleb Williams hasn't seen anything other than a first season of football that was just a mess in terms of the plan the Bears had for him. So you're starting from scratch. And whether Ben Johnson can be a good teacher, right, to a young when you got a pile of clay and you've got to mold it is a separate thing as well. But also the whole leader of men thing. A lot of folks, I don't know if you heard it, it stood out to me, Jeffrey. We had Jason Fitz on, and he said, because, you know, he's a Raiders guy here and they're going to get Ben Johnson. He said that there are some who say, or at least he'd heard from one of his, so that Ben Johnson is Adam Gase weird. Do you remember Adam Gase with the eyes? Like, Adam Gase, former Bears, I so remember Adam Gase when he got the Jets job, that from that opening presser with the eyes, the dude was weird. And so to have anything compared to how weird that whole Twilight Zone era tenure was for Adam Gase, you know, to Ben Johnson, I'm kind of like, cool. Back to your question, I don't know, man. I mean, from Pete Carroll now, whether you're just getting some stability, you know, I probably could sell myself on at this point. I don't want Brian Flores. That is all blitz what he does. It's more that than anything else. I'd take Aaron Glenn. I think he's done a better job with that Detroit defense than what Brian Flores is. Plus, you've got the red flag of Brian with Tua.
My biggest concern is that.
Has he learned something from that, or was that all just speak after he got to Minnesota and Tua goes public? I don't know at this point, dude. We've interviewed 30 people. And we're probably going to end up with some guy, I don't know, you know, we're probably going to end up with the Giants OC, Jeffrey, before it's all some guy that we haven't said or haven't focused on. You know the Bears.
All right, my man, enjoy it.
Take care, man.
That is Jason Smith of the Jason and John Show. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. Go to Coach John Gruden, who was on everyone's favorite show, Don't At Me, with Dan Dockich. Right now, you're seeing a bunch of rental clubs. You ever play golf and get a set of rental clubs? I don't know how to hit this club. I never putted with this putter. You make a lot of excuses. That's what I'm seeing in college sports right now. Everybody's looking out for the transfer portal and how much NIL money we deserve. It's really kind of sickening.
Oh, Gruden and Dockich on the air together.
Takes.
There's a lot of storytelling going on there.
Oh, yeah. All right, my man, we appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.
That, of course, is David Cobb. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For Dennis, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show's coming up next.